Hi, I'm Azriel, and you have made it to my show. Welcome. I'm excited to have you here and talk about whatever we're going to talk about today. My only request is that you don't request a twin flame reading, because I don't do those, okay? Like, I don't do those. Otherwise, welcome. Hey, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode with Valentine's Day just around the corner. I thought it would be wise to touch on a few things in regards to relationships and sex and infidelity and our expectations of relationships nowadays. And helping me to share some of this very important information is the sensually sensational Kamala Leslie, back with us again. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your time and your expertise with us.
Thank you for having me back for especially such a rich and highly charged topic.
I know, girl, that's right. And I want to, before we get into this too much for everybody listening, I want to say that these are our personal opinions that we have come to conclude over, you know, our own personal experiences and the relationships and things that we've had to deal with our clients and helping them. And just this, there's not one way for everybody. And that's what we want to discuss today, because that's where monogamy and infidelity kind of gets caught up. It's very much a one-way box. And we want to just open your minds to think outside of the box a little bit. And for those of you who are new to the show or who may have missed the last show with Kamala, be sure to listen to the episode titled Holistic Sex Ed. She first graced us with her presence and expertise in that episode. However, it was extremely condensed.
So, it was a quickie.
Just know that going in, it was extremely condensed. So this week, I'm just thrilled to have you back with us with more time available. So before we get into all of the juice on the topic, what is what's going on with you in your program since we last spoke, or, you know, if there's anything that you want to share or that you've expanded on?
Sure. So I have a website up. It's ecstaticbodylove.com. So I have a home now for my offerings. Yes, it's continually going to be updated. It's new, but at least you can find me there. And so my Jade Queens course is still planning to be relaunched. I'm in the process of creating the content and the sales page. So if you go to ecstaticbodylove.com, you can also opt in for a free guided audio meditation for women called The Love Cauldron. And then you'll be on the list. So when I finally have the Jade Queens course ready, which will be very soon, you can be informed. This will be a virtual course, so you can be anywhere in the world and do this. And then there's info about my one-on-one coaching for women, and then an offering I have for a VIP couples experience. So, and then lastly, actually, I am coaching men now too. So you'd have just contact me directly.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
Dan, girl, you're just spreading out everywhere. This is amazing. That's great. I'm happy for you and I'm excited. And can you spell out the website, please? Just so that people.
Yes,
get it right?
It's ecstatic. So ecstatic. Body, BODY, love, LOVE.com. And like I said, it'll continually be updated, but there's some info on it already that can be helpful. Yeah. So the main thing is the Jade Queens course is coming, and then I'm creating a couple other courses, but those are coming down the pipeline.
Ooh,
later.
So exciting.
Yes.
So exciting. All right. Well, I think I got a little bit of my jitters out of the way. I hope that you have too, like we shared before. This is a very heated topic.
Yeah.
And, you know, just letting it all out there, you guys. We're enjoying an adult beverage right now to help us get through this. It's a very heightened, very heated, very heavy topic. So we hope, I know that we hope together that we share enough information. And if you have any questions, please ask us, because sometimes things come across in a way that we don't intend them to, or just things can be misconstrued. Everybody interprets things differently. So any questions that you have at all on any of this, please do reach out to either of us for clarity.
Yeah, I was going to say that definitely as this conversation unfolds for this podcast, if you have specific questions specific to your own situation, that to share them, and we could answer them right in another another session. Certainly. Yeah.
Yes. I always want you back for more sessions. So jumping in, I have personally faced, you know, my share of awkward and at times heartbreaking moments in regards to infidelity. So I can speak from personal experience when I activate as a seer and as an NLP consultant for my clients. Mm-hmm. But because your therapy unlocks and heals and empowers the physical body, I'm curious to know what your approach is when you're working past infidelity in the relationships of your clients.
So, I haven't actually worked with it a ton, but what I do, understand that is needed and would encourage to people who've gone through it is, number one, to get support. Mm-hmm. This is such a broad topic, like to even define infidelity, to people often, I'm going to come back to that to finish what I started with the answer, but two people come into relationships, and as soon as they're monogamous, like how much discussion have they had about what the agreements are in terms of erotic autonomy? Mm-hmm. But let's say there's been a very clear, a breakage of an agreement and there has been a betrayal, I would never try to work through that alone with your partner without getting professional support. And agreed. Yeah. And then the first piece after that is you need to discern, especially as the person who's been betrayed, if you see enough value in trying to move through this with the partner, because there's,
agreed.
Yes, there's always an opportunity to learn more about yourself and one another through something like this. That doesn't mean it should have happened, but it happens all the freaking time, right? It's really common.
it's more common than anybody I think wants to accept.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of the reasons for this podcast is, you know, we got to just get it out there any way that we can. And I agree with you that the dynamic of the relationship is very important as far as, you know, how structured it is, how open it is, how fucking real it is. You know,
yeah.
You've got to be real with each other. You can't be hiding these desires or these inclinations or anything. You know, you have to be open with your partner. So certainly with a, I don't condone random cheating all over the place. That's just disrespectful. I do, you know, there is a line that that I can see in that. So, but with a couple that's truly in love with each other and they have an established family together or a relationship or home or anything that's just really been solid. I mean, in my opinion, mm-hmm. in working with NLP, you know, the teaching that there's no such thing as a bad intention and we need to work through these things. Okay, why did I do this? Why did I make that decision? Or understand why your partner made the decisions that they made, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's all very mental. That kind of takes the mental part of it and the emotional part of it. And you kind of look at the facts outside of the two of those running amok together. But from the body's perspective, mm-hmm. how do you heal from something like that? Because especially as women, we have a lot of trauma. We hold a lot of trauma and stress in our root, you know, in our genitals.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we recover from something like the scars of infidelity?
So one thing, okay, so there's the pieces around rebuilding trust and partnership, and I can speak more to that because it is, it's going to be fundamental. If you've had any sort of infidelity or betrayal, and you feel you're holding it in your body, I mean, like the work that I teach with the Jade Egg, we do clearing practices and stuff where you actually get into the emotion and where you might feel it stored in your body, and you can access it and move it out and release it. And you've got to get into the emotion, right? Yeah. So if you've like even with sexual trauma, if you've stored, that's a different topic, but if you've stored that in your body because a boundary was physically, literally transgressed, or could have been psychic, but you still store it in your body, you still want to get into the emotion and where you store it in your body. So where I work with women with the somatic approach is to find where that's happening via finding the sensation and where it feels like it's living in the body, and then to give it voice and give it expression to move it. So that, does that, is that clear?
Yeah.
So that's going to be huge. And so that definitely I do in one-on-one coaching work. And because then you can also start to, with yourself in your own body, restore a sense of trust and restore a sense of pleasure. Now rebuilding trust with your partner is going to be like the next level thing, because you're going to have to get out all of the emotion around it first, and what is going to be required if the two people decide that there's enough value in the relationship to continue, and you're not dealing with a partner who's got a personality disorder, who's just who literally is so psychologically, emotionally wounded from childhood or whatever else that they just can't cross the bridge into secure attachment, right? Into true self-reflection and remorse. Like, if you decide that there's enough value there, then that person who was the transgressor of the agreement, they're going to have to really hold and hear the upset of the other person for a period of time.
Yeah. And that's difficult to face for anyone.
Oh, it's so hard.
That's a bitch. You really, let's just call it what it is.
It totally sucks, because I've been to some degree, nothing extreme, but I've been on both sides in very, you know, soft ways. And usually the transgressor is kind of like, I apologized. It's in the past. It's over. Can we move on? But this person,
can we please just move
on?
Yes.
But the other,
don't look at me anymore with a judgmental eye, please.
Stop bringing it up. But there is like a psychologically healthy period of time. I can't say specifically what that is to each couple, where the person who was,
it's always different.
Yeah. Who was hurt, they need to be seen and heard. And the one who went outside the relationship has to almost consistently remind the person they hurt of their commitment and rebuild that trust. I mean, it's that's a lot of work, because
it's a lot of
yeah
work.
Because then also the person who went outside the relationship, you know, they're gonna also have to trust, if it's been like 2 years and this betrayal keeps coming up, now is the person who was hurt in the relationship acting out past what they should. And so, I mean, that's why I say get support, because you want someone who can hold the container and the complexity. And the reason why I say it's complex, I have a very open-minded approach to this without condoning infidelity, but I see the complexity of our human nature. It's not always just about, oh, I needed sex, right? It's so much more about the deep psyche and feeling parts of ourselves that maybe we're not getting to experience with the other person, or do you know what I mean? There could be so many things, and we can go more into that.
Let's do it. Let's go into more of that. That's actually one of my questions.
Okay.
You know, what are some of the most common reasons that you've experienced as far as, you know, men or women seeking out sexual gratification from people other than their spouse or their significant other?
Yeah. So there's always more than meets the eye. So one, I want a presence that, like, we traditionally think that infidelity is just men, right? And for a long time, the percentage was probably a lot higher because the original relationship structure was for economic, building economically together, the woman being economically secure and paternal security, meaning the man knows, oh, he's married a virgin and his bloodline is secure because he knows that it's this nuclear unit. And it was actually, in some cultures, depending on the context, sort of okay for him to quietly slip out while wife was supposed to be happy being domestic, you know, with
pregnant and barefoot.
And like having the financial security and the quote unquote loyalty, the financial loyalty, perhaps, without really any real discussion of her sexuality or her sexual pleasure. And that's kind of all been complicated in religious conditioning. But now that women have more economic parity, not quite 100% economic parity, but, you know, women can leave relationships and take care of themselves financially, not in all cases, but it's more common. The infidelity gap has been closing, so women can be just as likely to step out. I wanted to just presence that because it's,
We see and acknowledge that both men and women can be, they can cheat. We get that. It's not just men.
So sometimes it can be like a common, approach to understanding infidelity. One, you have to define, is an emotional bond with someone else cheating. Like, I know women, I have women friends who've had emotional affairs, but they don't define it as cheating. And then there's men who,
because it's not physical.
Yeah. And then there's men who've maybe like had a little something, something, but they didn't have sex. So that's not cheating. So there's this whole like super loosey goosey. What is it? What is it? But no one wants,
it's like, what is it? What is it not? What is it?
No one wants to, how often do people get into a relationship and sit down and say, what are your expectations erotically? What is erotic autonomy for you? You know, like
it should be every time. It should be
every
time.
But it's a really confronting conversation to have.
Mm-hmm.
Really confronting.
It can be.
And there's, and I'll still go into why people cheat, but then there's this whole thing of like, the more we give up our autonomy. So this is the modern day, this is what I wanted to get to, and then we'll get to the reasons, but the modern day structure of relationship, like you and I've been talking about, is this person is the soulmate. There's this emotional transparency of like feeling like the one and so special and so chosen, and you know me inside and out. And it's might still be based on a relationship goal of child rearing and raising a family and, you know, being a part of your religious or spiritual community, all those pieces. But it's also like, the romance did not used to be part, romance and love was not part of relationship structures before the Industrial Revolution, according to what I've been reading.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so now it's like, I want you to be my everything. And I need to feel special. And is that part of why it hurts so freaking much if someone steps out in some way, because we've invested so much meaning, in this bond.
Yeah.
So
definitely. And it's been a lot of conditioning, like massive conditioning. It's almost, it's mind boggling to go from that one step where we were to where we are now, just in the last few hundred years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, my soulmate, oh, my twin flame, oh, you know, my person forever. And it's like, wow, man, we've been so conditioned to need that. And it's, I'm not saying that it isn't beautiful. It is and can be a very beautiful thing, but so many people get way too caught up in it. And we don't even really understand what true love is anymore. It's more of the, at least in the people that I've worked with and have had interactions with myself, it's very much infatuation. They're getting it confused.
Tell me more about that.
I have several female clients who are forever on the lookout for their twin flame or their soulmate, or they feel that every person that they interact with is their twin flame or their soulmate. And I completely agree that we can have more than one. I know this. We can have more than one twin flame or soulmate in this lifetime. but not everybody that you have a relationship with is that.
Right.
And so we set ourselves up, in my opinion, to be hurt in this way. You know, we think this is what we want and what we need. And we build up these relationships where when you look out on the outside looking in, you're like, is this person really even that into you?
Yeah.
You know, but the other person who's in it wants it so bad, so desperately that they completely overlook the fact that, you know, no, this person isn't as invested. Mm. No, this person doesn't care as much. And then they get crushed when something happens, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think too, I mean, I've known people like who were married and now divorced and, okay, so what happened? Well, I felt this pressure because I turned this age and it was the time in my culture and in my life to do it. And I was with this woman and she wanted it. And I can't remember if this person actually cheated or if they just ended up in a divorce or both, but this can be a thing. Like there's a couple different pathways. This is why what I wanted a presence in the beginning is this is a really complex subject. And, you know, infidelity is still in our overall culture. Like we're in America, like with tons of different cultures inside of America, but in American culture, it's morally so condemned, but it's existed for as long as the institution of marriage and monogamy has existed. But in some cases, and I'm kind of citing Esther Perel, who's the sort of really the expert on this. She has books about it. You know, in some cases, people and therapists can take sort of a pathological approach to it, that there's something wrong with the cheater, or there's something that needs to be fixed in the relationship. In some cases, that is true. And maybe not fixed is a little harsh, but they're not communicating well. There's like stresses that have been going on in one person's work, or of course, like when the kids come along, like the mother's putting all of her attention on the kids, and there's no structural support in our culture of how to rekindle the attention that the man needs and for her to also feel.
And that's a very real need.
Oh my God. It's a very,
very real.
And
I'm sorry to interrupt you on this, but I just want to make a point that, you know, to all of the ladies out there listening to this, I mean, it's okay for your husband to have needs.
Yeah.
So many women I've found feel that, you know, it's too much pressure. He shouldn't want this. He should know that I have all this stuff going on. And it's like, you know what? Yes, you do. And I'm a mother, so I can speak from experience. Mm. I'm a mother of two. Mm-hmm. It's just, but you have to put forth that effort with your spouse. You have to still maintain that relationship. Otherwise the whole thing just dissipates.
Yeah. And it's
the whole thing crumbles.
And it's really damaging. And I think it's hard, like where I live in the Bay Area. I mean, unless you're freaking high rolling, I mean, it's stressful when you've got both people are working. And then most cases, it's still usually the woman is also raising the kids and you have to consciously feed that connection. So it takes an effort and there's no shame in it. It's just that, like, just cause you're in a long-term relationship, you can't just let the sex go. And so this is the other,
no, you cannot.
Right. And what happens. And so part of the work that I teach, going back to my Jade Egg work, is to help women have this like solo cultivation practice where they're doing something just for themselves to feed that part of themselves. And then from there, they have more to share. And of course, the common complaint is, I don't have time. I don't have privacy. Well, you have to set a boundary.
You have to make it.
You have to set a boundary. Yeah. But going back to like the reasons, I think that people get married or in long-term relationships based on some condition, like familial, cultural expectations of, you know, being in that long-term partnership of being the good family man, being the good mother, all these things. And those are all beautiful things. They're value-based things. And you should know your values, your shared values getting into a relationship. But these expectations we have for a partner to provide this like extreme emotional security and safety, right? You make me feel secure and safe, secure and safe. And Esther Perel talks about this. And yet the human psyche, we need mystery. We need novelty. We need excitement. And we want this person to provide both.
Everything.
for years on end without actually still wanting to talk about sex. All. Like, fuck. So much pressure.
So much pressure.
And some people do so it. Much. I mean,
it's unrealistic.
And some people can do it. And I would argue that it's a class thing. The people who have more resources are more likely to be able to make it happen because they can hire the nannies and they can go to the personal development workshops and the tantra weekends and the, and that's not a judgment. I'm just saying, like,
no, it's just, it's facts are facts. Yeah. When you have that ability, you have that, you're more relaxed in everything. You can, you have the time to do that. You don't have to force the time to do
that. Yeah, you can get the nanny.
Yes, the nannies are fucking important.
but so there's this approach to understanding infidelity that includes looking at where's communication gone wrong in a relationship. I talked to a friend recently who's separated from her husband, and she loves him. And when I asked her about it, it was more that ways that he stopped showing up for her and keeping his word around, you know, projects around the house and being on time for stuff, that she lost her mojo for him. And he still was not able, for whatever reason, like to step up. And so that, for her, that loss of emotional sort of trust impacted her libido for him because she felt like she was being forced into nagging him all the time. So then you have to question, well, what's going on with him? Is he subtly sabotaging his capacity to stay in a long-term relationship by dropping the ball repeatedly? I don't know. I mean, that's a more like detailed conversation, but so there could sometimes be a disconnect that starts to happen between the two people, and that is really common. But also, there's this thing that, like, no matter what, when you're in a long-term relationship with someone, like, you're still an individual.
Oh yeah, and I think as women, we've lost that part. We lose that. We completely hand it over. In most situations, we hand that over to the relationship. I won't even say just to the man, but to the relationship. We just completely offer ourselves and we lose who we are as an individual, as a woman.
Exactly. And,
you know,
and that, and we all have, like, both men and women and everyone in between, we all have these different parts of ourselves. And again, this expectation that this one twin flame soulmate special boo thing is gonna be it and fill it all, like all those parts of ourselves. Like, I think that at times, like, quote unquote infidelity, or infidelity without the quotes, like is like, it could be that someone lost their parents and they're having a midlife crisis, and then they meet this other person that reignites some like joie de vivre in them that they're terrified of losing because they're facing their own mortality for the first time. And it has nothing to do with your partner and how perfect your partner is.
I'm so glad that you said that. Please, everybody, did you just pay attention to what she said?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I feel that way so strongly. It does not have, more often than not, it doesn't have anything to do with the person that you're in the relationship with.
Yes.
It's very much whatever the hell the other person is going through at the time.
In their own identity.
Exactly.
Yeah, because also in these long-term relationships, you get solidified again into like the mother or the, which of course is totally asexualized, or the good, the family man, the good man, like where there's whatever your interpersonal dynamics are with your partner, there can be a numbing out or dumbing down or a compromise or sacrifice of, or hiding of these parts of yourself in the name of like building a family or in the name of these things. And yet like you're still an autonomous individual with your own life path and your own soul. I mean, that's my belief, your own soul. Not everyone's going to believe that. And different experiences in life and people will awaken these parts. If that, again, that doesn't condone breaking an agreement.
No,
it's more just, just having an honest conversation of like, why is this so common? And then it's also like, why does it hurt so much?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think too, you know, another thing, yes, we're very conditioned. We've been very conditioned to feel that we need these things. We need this type of relationship and dynamic, but karmically as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the relationships that we have with each other. And you can believe this or not, you know, but just touching on another option of the reasons why we go through the things that we go through and why things sometimes hurt as much as they do is the karmic debts that we have to pay for each other.
Tell me more.
You know? So, you know, say that there's a couple who went through a lot of abuse. One person abused the other person in whatever ways in a life before this
yeah.
one. And now in this present life, the other person can either be, they can either switch roles, or there can be other karmic debts that come up in the lifetime of the person who was the abuser in the time before that cause that additional stress and that additional heartache. You know, it just kind of amplifies
yeah.
it. And then also there's astrology, there's our natal charts, everything that we are in our astrological composition, who makes up who we are, or what makes up who we are, pardon me. We don't take the time to even understand ourselves, really. I mean, in my opinion, everybody should know what their natal chart is and understand how they work. But and everybody laughs all the time. Oh, okay, what's your sign? What's your sign? It's so funny.
Right.
What time were you born? Everybody jokes about it, but it really does have an impact on who you are, you know? It does make up who you are. And it, as confusing as it is at times, it's like, okay, this sign rules this house. And so this clashes with this sign that rules this house. And that's why you have these issues here and blah, blah, blah. So I think that's another thing to take into consideration in serious relationships. And especially if you're facing, you know, infidelity, take a look at each other in your blueprints, the blueprints of you.
Definitely.
You know, and see how each of you works and see if you can understand how the other person thinks and feels and responds to things, and then take it from there. If, you know, if the, like you said before, if the relationship is worth preserving, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think, like, I mean, I understand that language and I understand, of course, like, you know, past life karma, but that's, it's a very small percentage of us who have that.
Very small percentage, but you know, it's growing.
That's
it
true.
It is growing.
That's true. And it, but no, and I agree, because like when I talk to my Vedic astrologer, it's like, he was like, you've been through a lot of shorter, like lover type relationships in this section of your life, because you're an old soul and you're completing a lot of things. And that's exactly what it's been for me. And I can sit here coming from a family that, with very traditional values, that where you get married young and you stay married your whole life. There's a total value to that. Same. I respect it. Okay. But mm-hmm. if I try to like fit myself into that, but that's not what my calling has yet been, then I'm just going to suffer.
Yeah.
Right. So I need to understand that there's a reason why I was born into that. There's values there that I do have within myself that have been instilled in me. But to try to like fit into a paradigm that has not been my thing, and I'm an evolutionary being who's a couple generations ahead, I'm a pioneer, right? So are you.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have to accept that nature of myself to realize we're having this conversation for a reason, because it's mm-hmm. it's we're revealing truths and complexity of the nature of the relationship structure that is the most common thing. For a reason, and people need to expand their mind if they can get past their moral judgment of something that happens all the time. Infidelity, mm-hmm. soft cheats, hard cheats, however you want to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However you want to say it, whatever it is. I mean, cheating is cheating.
Yeah. And it happens so commonly, and people justify it. And all these, exactly. Well, it was emotional. Well, like I touched her.
We were just texting.
Yeah. I touched her. She didn't touch me. Or. It was just a text, and you know, but it's an important conversation. And I do think that for women who've been raised in traditional ways to save themselves, whether or not they had premarital sex or not, but to give it their sexuality to their man and only for him. Like I have a respect for monogamy. I'm not saying I'm anti-monogamous, but that specific conditioning around it's for him,
it has to be this way,
and then
exactly
and,
it's for him
and love, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then love and your sexual energy and sexual experiences are so tightly bound together that you can't see clearly, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've got this like projection that as soon as you're sexual, there's love involved. And sometimes they're two completely different things. And when we're putting, putting it in the hands of the man that we choose to be with, without having a relationship with that part of ourselves to understand our nature, our desires, our needs, it's like, it's a falsity. Yes. Thank you.
but I want to just kind of highlight something that you said for everybody listening. I want you to realize that there truly is a difference between being in love mm-hmm. and having great sex. I mean, how many people have you had great sex with that you just couldn't stand afterwards? You know, be real, be honest with yourselves right now. How many people have you had a very intimate connection with that just outside of that, there was absolutely nothing there, you know?
Yeah. In my case, like I've had really great sex at times, but I just know, like I have enough objectivity going in to know what this is and what this isn't. And that doesn't mm-hmm. say you don't develop feelings. Like we're hardwired sexually as women, literally, like there's parts of our yoni that get touched and it activates mm-hmm. centers of our brain for bonding. It's like a biological thing. And so it's natural to have those feelings, but you gotta, if you're going to understand your nature, you've got to know what something is and what something isn't. And again, I don't want any of this to sound like I'm telling a woman that she shouldn't be monogamous or that she's wrong for conserving that part of herself for one person. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
I'm just suggesting
to understand the difference between love and sex, right? And
exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I was raised in a very traditional Christian home as well. So I was raised very similarly to you mm-hmm. in that those, you know, the family dynamic is very, very important. And I do believe in that wholeheartedly. But at the same time, me, myself personally, I feel that I have had enough experiences and I've seen enough things happen. And I have a broader perspective on relationships as a whole and sex and everything, that if I were to have a sit down with a person that I felt I could be married to, because I've been married already, but you know, this is speaking future wise, I would want to have that conversation with said person and say, look, if this is something that you want, I'm 100% in. Mm. I can be 100% in with monogamy. Mm-hmm. I can be 100% in with polyamory, but I need to be 100% honest and I need you to be 100% honest with me.
Yeah.
I think that's what it comes down to in the end, is just your honesty and the respect of each other to be that honest and to be that brave, to be that honest, that really can save a relationship.
I think so too. I totally agree with you that the cultivation of self-awareness, right, is so mm-hmm, key mm-hmm. before you get into any relationship. Self-awareness meaning like, yeah, that honesty with yourself, and therefore you're able to, even when it's uncomfortable and you're afraid you're going to lose the love of the person you're potentially going to be with, you're willing to be that honest. Like I can give this, I can't give that. And it's hard mm-hmm. because those things change over time. And, I agree. I think self-awareness too, because also once we're in an intimate thing, all these projections and childhood shit can come up. And so if you don't have self-awareness cultivated, you're just going to get into these gridlocks of mm-hmm. projection and playing out shit, which sometimes can be the cause of infidelity. Someone's acting out childhood wounding. That is sometimes the cause, of course, not mm-hmm. not in all cases, but there has, yeah, if you want true intimacy, you've got to kind of know yourself and your conditioning and your desires and all of that. Absolutely. And it's hard. I mean, that's a tall order.
I know. It is.
Because we change and we evolve. Like what was true today, you know, in 5 years, it could be a different thing.
It's totally the 5 years. It seems that every 5 years you do almost a complete overhaul of your perspective on life, and just everything that you believe in, it gets adjusted.
Yeah, it does. And I do think, going back to the sort of the past life karma, in the astrology. And I do think that there are some people that are made for a lifetime of partnership with one another. Of course, I see it all the time. On the same token, what percentage of those people are maintaining the spark, if that's important to them? And I believe it's on some level got to be important to everyone. It's important to usually at least one of the two people. Mm-hmm. How honest are people being about that? And why is it that, in, you know, what ways in exchange for this security, what ways do we like start to hide parts of ourselves because we want that security? Maybe that's why I opted to be out of relationship more than in, because I'm looking for that sweet spot of absolute intimacy while getting to be oneself, but still, you know, building that trust.
Yeah.
Which is a dance.
It's a tango.
It's a tango.
That's just a freaking tango, babe.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm kind of high in the clouds right now.
Jeez. I know. We're going all over. I like it. It's good. It's it's rich. It's like, it's definitely, we're on a power journey.
I know. It's a little bit scary, but it's exciting still at the same time. And, you know, just, and anyone listening, please, 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 if you have questions, write
questions,
in, ask us,
comments. Yeah,
exactly. This is important for everybody, you know, because of course we're going to share the information, but it's important for us as well, you know, for Kamala and myself to be able to have a better perspective on people, and that way we can help our clients, you know. So this is good for us as well.
Definitely.
For the rest of you. So what's your take on possessiveness? Because in my personal opinion, I think a lot of the conditioning of needing this soulmate or this very structured American family dynamic, we've become very possessive.
It's such a good question. I kind of think, I think that some of it's just human nature. I think, you know, like in the polyamory community, which I'm not really a part of, but I have friends who identify as, you know, polyamorous, and they go to community gatherings and talk it all out. That's like the famous thing. Like they're talking all the time.
They do a lot of talking. But that's good. I mean, you know what? In that though, girl, they've got that right.
They've got that right.
Their communication is on point.
That's true. Although at a certain point, when you're processing down to the hair follicles, and when you looked at me that way, I felt, and what did you mean? I mean, there's a point where it's like, oh my God, just okay, fuck me. Just like. But I forgot where I was going with the initial thing. Though. How did I get on poly?
Talking about possessiveness.
Possessiveness. And... I mean, what I do appreciate about, I think it's part of human nature, honestly, possessiveness and jealousy, is because a lot of times people in the polyamorous relationships, even when it's an open thing, when you have all this freedom or consensual non-monogamy, you still have jealousy.
Yeah, that's a. I agree. But is it easier to manage, do you think, in that kind of dynamic than it would be, say, in like a monogamous relationship, that all of a sudden something comes out of left field with your partner? You know, there was a text that was found, or
right,
somebody ended up having sex with somebody else, or you know what I mean? Like, is that? Do you think that there's a difference in the extreme emotional reactions that we face?
You know, I don't know. I think that would be a good thing to research, because I know that even in poly dynamics, people break agreements. It's that human mm-hmm. thing again of like, what is it about transgression and going against when you have all these agreements where you can sleep with her or you can do this and that with him? Why do people still go outside even those agreements? And like, yeah, of course it's going to be like jealousy and pain inducing when someone, and you're in a monogamous container and someone breaks it. It's like, cause you had an agreement. It sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anytime that an agreement is, is broken. That's just,
it hurts.
That's a tough one. It does. It does. And it doesn't even matter really what the agreement was, anything, you know, you did, we could say, okay, I'm going to meet you for coffee at this time. And for 3 weeks, you never show up. That would hurt.
Right.
You know?
Right. Of course.
I would be upset about that.
Of course. Yeah. So I don't know, because I've heard many poly people or people in open relationships say that they still get really jealous. I do think that when they have a primary partner in an open thing, and it's a primary thing where they're your main squeeze, where you've got the emotional bond, mm-hmm. and you might even be married. When the agreements are clear, and I think when they continue to build that trust of what the parameters are, I do think that there is less reactivity, and then they get to enjoy the flexibility of that freedom. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's a curious question. Are some people more jealous and possessive than others? I mean, I definitely have that streak in me. Like,
I have too. Yeah. I have too. But you know, what's funny though, is a lot of that for myself, anyways, I can speak for myself only, of course, but, I used to be insanely jealous, like really, really bad, to where it was unhealthy. I was causing myself a lot of physical issues. You know, I would break out on my back. I would just, I was that. And a lot of that stems from my daddy issues. I've got some serious daddy issues with both of my dads. I got two dads.
Oh, wow. Double whammy. Double daddy. Just kidding.
Double whammy. Exactly. One of them got me with all the psychological stuff, you know, and, you know, I wasn't really allowed to be a girl.
Okay.
It was very, you know, man up, Ezra, man up. So I've very much got that mentality now of man up, in pretty much any emotional thing that I face.
Yeah.
Been conditioned. But then the, you know, with my biological dad, he it was very much love and relationships. You know, it was just like, okay, I love you so much. And he romanticized everything so much, but then he was never fucking there.
Oh,
he would, you know, he would build me up, and then he would just disappear. So where the hell was I going with
well,
that?
Well, you were talking about working through your possessiveness.
Jealousy.
Yeah, jealousy.
Yeah, possessiveness and jealousy. So I think that definitely – I noticed that starting to shift, those feelings started to subside once I started working on those issues that I had with my dad. And then also when I started investigating, looking into my natal chart and realizing, okay, I react this way because of this, because these are my beliefs and this is what I feel and blah, blah, blah. So I need to be looking for somebody who embodies these qualities so that there's no conflict. And then just in aging and, you know, transitioning from adolescence into adulthood, I'm so much more confident now than I have ever been in my entire life. And that has eliminated a lot of jealousy to the point where I do think that I could have that dynamic that you were just talking about with the whole, you have your, you know, your main squeeze, your husband, your wife, but that you have a very structured agreement mm-hmm. that this can happen outside. So long as it stays outside, I feel that now in my skin, I'm comfortable enough to be able to do something like that, something to that effect. If my partner wanted to be, obviously I would much rather be in a monogamous relationship, but the jealousy thing for me where before, and the concept, just the idea of it. And I'll admit I was very judgmental for a long time about the polyamorous mm-hmm. lifestyle. Because I was raised Seventh-day Adventist and there was a lot of shaming in sex mm-hmm. and, affairs and everything like that, and it just didn't resonate with me at that time. Now it's a different Azrael.
Yeah, that's a beautiful journey. And I can relate to, in the sense of like knowing I have a, you know, possessive, jealous nature, and I'll sort of have double standards where I'm like, oh, well, I'd love to be with a guy where I get to have my freedom, but I want him completely loyal and devoted to me. I'm like, oh, that's a nice double. But it's kind of refreshing because the double standard has been for us to be like at home and, you know, with no desire, while the man can go do, you know, so yeah. It's just like, come on, guys, you've got to work through whatever insecurities or whatever. I know for some men, it's very primal around thinking mm-hmm. of their woman with someone else. Some will never be able to mm-hmm. allow it, but like some of it's rooted in their own insecurities. But what I've noticed, what I've learned in myself is when I've been dating multiple men, like I can have an experience with one man and I'm completely present and only with him when I'm with him. and let that go. And then I'm with some other person and I know what it is and know what it isn't. And I'm completely present with them. And there's no, like, I can handle that. So theoretically, if I'm, you know, with a man and he's with someone else, as long as it's clean and it's like, there's that boundary of like, he's just with this person. It doesn't take away from who I am. The stakes get higher when we have deep feelings for someone.
Yeah.
They get that much higher. And then that need again for transparency and honesty and trust is there. But then again, it's that fine balance of like, do we need this outside person for our sense of value, worthiness, and security? I mean, it's, where does that come from in like the bond, in the human bonding relationship thing, where we want that sense of I'm special, I'm number one. And why does it feel like that's being taken away when there's another person in the mix? Is it inherently taking anything away from us? Right. These are just the open-ended questions. And, you know, some people are going to always only going to consider monogamy and be like, I can't handle that. And that's totally fine.
Totally fine.
But it's complicated because it's people get into like codependent unconscious dynamics in their cozy long-term relationships all the time. And like, to me, that's not freedom.
Yeah.
I want to be with someone where there's a sense of expansion and getting to become more of myself with that person. And I realize that one person can't fulfill every single thing. Of course, I don't, because I don't subscribe to that. But what are the ways that this bond, and maybe again, this is coming back to the whole soulmate ideal of like, this person like helps me feel freer and become more of me and more actualized. That's one of my values. But that's not going to be the case for everyone.
No.
And again, like once you've got feelings, like the stakes are higher. It's
they real. Yeah. Yeah. When you brought that up, I kind of had a little, one of my guides was like, zing, zing right there. Okay. Focus on that. Okay. Before I offer this to anybody.
What do you mean? Focus on
how you would feel if the feelings were involved. Yeah. Like if whoever I was with was like, okay, yes, I'm your main squeeze. We are the unit.
Yeah.
You go out there and you have your fun and do whatever you're going to do. But I think that adding that emotional component, that might definitely raise some of those daddy issues that I got. Oh, are you going to leave me? You got emotions over there. Why aren't they good enough here? Sex is sex to me. At this point, I can differentiate sex just being a physical act, you know, that it can be. But when the emotions combine with that physical interaction, oh man, that's when it's amazing. And that's when I would, admittedly be nervous.
Yeah, definitely. No, I agree. And that's like, there is a part of me that is very monogamous, and craves that and values it. And I think the value of monogamy is that you get to grow together in a container. I just am skeptical of like, we're going to be together for 30 years and
and nothing's ever going to happen. You're never going to look at anybody else. And you know, there's never going to be that wink or that text message again. I always want to bring it back to the text messages because I hear it all the time. Oh, I caught them texting this and this and this. It's like, oh man. Yeah. You know, and then from the opposite side, you know, from the other person's perspective, it was just a text. We're just texting each other, you know, it's like, oh man, I'm sorry, but it's, if you're engaging in any way with anybody else and your other, you know, you're the person that you're with is unaware or doesn't like what you're doing and you're doing it anyways, it's cheating. It is. It's infidelity.
Well, and that's the thing why, again, we come back to that need early on in a relationship for people to define like, what it is.
What
because,
is cheating to
because
you?
Two people are most likely going to have two different things. Like, well, he watched porn, he cheated. And for me, I'm like,
that's a big one. Yeah. Oh, wait, talk to me about that. Because that's come up with a few of my clients as well, where, you know, there was just, people were just destroyed that their husbands or women were destroyed that their husbands were watching porn, that they felt it was, you know, that they were cheating on them with the porn stars or something. And I can understand to a point where some of them were coming from, but what's your opinion on that?
I think, I mean, one, I'll say if someone's got a porn addiction, that's just going to impact their ability to be sexually intimate because it really does start to rewire the brain around sex in a way that's going to completely desensitize them. So if they've got like a chronic thing, that's sort of a different conversation that is actually going to impact his ability to be with her and create a fulfilling sexual experience. Yeah. Different conversation though from, you know, that's cheating. I mean, again, for me, that wouldn't be, that's something people have to discuss beforehand. Then, and again, it comes back to this important thing of like the woman, like in this modern day model of relationship, we're supposed to be everything for our partner. So she's supposed to forevermore turn him on in all these ways and vice versa. And the thing, and that it just, the, you understand Eros, like the erotic, I mean, the erotic is irrational. And instead of sort of demonizing it, it's like we're going to be turned on in some way by different things for the rest of our lives. And yes, in an ideal relationship, you'll evolve and explore those pieces and be willing to go there together because it takes risk and vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. Some person discovers they're into like kink and BDSM and, you know, what if their partner isn't and how do they reveal that they want to be tied up and spanked or whatever, you know,
yeah.
Or psychological kink where it's role play and all this. I mean, it's really not that uncommon. So again, I got on this tangent around talking about porn, but it's like, yeah, you have to have these, but it's around these expectations that this one person can fulfill you. And it's really not, it's again, it's like conversations have to be had early on, but it's also just not personal. It's like you end up feeling, I think, especially as women, when a man cheats in some way, we feel so deficient. Like, but I gave you this and I'm this to you and I raised your kids and I'm sexy and I'm, but it's like, that's the wrong, of course it's going to feel like that. But that's just like, it's like, I hate that a person ends up feeling that way because of that model. I'm not saying I have the answer, but
I'm just saying I don't fucking like it.
I don't like it. And it's too much. It's too much expectation. And also like men, as they age, their testosterone lowers. They don't get hard as readily. And so, I mean, women have desire too. If a woman's coming into her own in her 40s or 50s or whatever with her desire and her partner's testosterone is lower, I mean, that's a real thing that people don't talk about.
No, they don't. And actually, what's interesting on that point and the topic of infidelity is the majority of women that have sought me out for help, who have faced being the person who had cheated in the relationship, they were all around 40 or older. It's like, let me think about this. There's something to this here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the men that they're with, that they're married to, have been married to for years, they're starting to go through their own physical changes. And as women, we kind of shift in the opposite direction.
We shift in the opposite direction. I am a testament to that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so and then there's this question, too, of long-term monogamy, when one person loses interest in sex. Maybe it's lower testosterone and his sexual function, or for her, a lot of times it's women in menopause, because women are not taught in our culture that they can maintain and get their sex drive back. That's part of what I teach. It's this myth that she becomes, you know, asexual. It's just a hormone change that she has to work with. So whether it's that or his lower testosterone. So one person in a long-term relationship, I mean, we're talking like long, long-term, they've been married, blah, blah, blah. No longer wants sex, is the other person just supposed to forego that part of themselves in the name of monogamy? Yeah, I've known couples where the man steps out because she's no longer interested. Then she finds out, not an affair, but more like a, you know, a rendezvous, something. And then they get divorced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had the same experience with clients where, and it's always a tricky situation to, as a counselor, you know, to deal with, because you don't want to tell somebody, well, what did you expect?
Right.
But, you know, in so many words, you kind of do need to express that, because, you know, you can't, this is still a human.
Yeah.
And just because you've lost your sexual desires, you know, if you're in a committed relationship or even a marriage, you know, you're supposed to do what you can to make your partner happy, right?
Right.
that should be just kind of a common sense thing. So if you've lost your libido, then you should go and start seeking out ways to try to amp that back up. If you just completely shut down and you're fine with shutting down, that's fine. But your partner might not be okay with that. And how can you, you know, be really all that mad if they step out of your relationship to get something that you are completely just taking away from them?
Exactly.
That they need.
Exactly.
I don't understand.
I know. And it's so common. And then in how many cases too, is it if these couples had an erotic sex coach or, you know, erotic counseling, whatever, that helped them understand their deeper nature of desire, and how many cases could they actually rekindle it? And they just weren't given the tools, mm-hmm. because you're supposed to just get married and keep it with no effort, no sex dates on the calendar.
Exactly.
And it's like, this is my problem with like our culture, is like, you gotta like keep it alive. And a lot of it's not just about a new technique. It's about that relationship with your own erotic nature, which will often mm-hmm. take you to the edge of your own identity in deep ways, to the unknown, mm-hmm. to the great mystery, to source. And you've got to take off the mask and be revealed in your desire.
Yes.
And when you've been married for 30 years, raising kids, building a home, I mean, maybe that's too tall of an order. I don't have judgment because I'm not in that position. I just think that I do have judgment on the structure and the expectation. And that if
the
one
expectation
one,
is, it's too
yeah,
much.
The one person becomes asexual and the other still wants sex and they're just supposed to forego it. I mean, that's not honest.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Woo!
Man.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Such a good conversation. And
to
be willing to dance with, you know, the honesty in this, of the uncertainty of like, yes, you want, even me, I want the container of safety and security and bondedness and emotional intimacy and trust, but to keep that, the frisson, the like mm-hmm. aliveness, you have to be willing to dance with some uncertainty in the way you see your partner. If you're trying to only be stable and secure and safe, and I know him inside and out and he'll never do this, it's like that person's an autonomous individual.
Mm-hmm.
Who may be in a commitment to you, but they're still an autonomous individual with their own thoughts, feelings, and things. And we don't own that person.
No.
We never will.
No. Never, ever will. Half of us can't even own ourselves.
Right.
Like, we have no.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh my gosh. If you don't know yourself, you can't own yourself. You know, you can't. I'm going to borrow from Dexter here with the whole dark passenger thing. We all have a dark passenger.
What's a dark passenger? I don't know this.
Oh man, that's just the dark side of you,
oh,
your shadow side.
Yes. And there's good stuff in the shadow.
Yeah, there is. But you gotta be able to work with it. You gotta be able to understand it. You gotta be able to control it.
Yeah.
And a lot of us don't even have that kind of control over ourselves, which is, you know, part of how we end up in messes like infidelity, you know.
Definitely.
You have no control.
Definitely. Yeah.
So
man. Such a good topic. It's impossible for it to be an exhaustive conversation to cover all angles. And that's again why I think people, if they want to write in with questions and
mm-hmm. Yes, please do.
Yeah, because it's powerful and yeah, powerful topic. and again, infidelity hurts. It sucks. And there's lots to be learned about oneself and mind from it. So,
but you can also, you know, you can let it destroy you. This is in absolutely anything. You can let infidelity destroy you, or you can come out on top. You can learn from it. You can learn about yourself. You can learn about your partner, and you can come out on top. You don't have to be a victim.
Definitely. Definitely.
You know, so just food for thought, everybody.
Absolutely.
Well, man, I'm like,
I know, we're like, woo,
woo. I'm so happy, Kamala, that you came on and you did this with me. And it was admittedly a topic that I knew I needed to discuss, but I did not want to do it by myself. And I'm so grateful to you for sharing this with me and for sharing all of your knowledge with all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. This has been super rich, hopefully valuable to the listeners, hopefully coherent, clear.
And then real quick before we go, just let everybody know again how they can get in contact with you.
Yes. You can find me at ecstaticbodylove.com. It's ECSTATIC. Right, ecstatic body, BODYLOVE.com. That's my current website. It will have some new updates on it, but that's the best way to find me and my emails on there. And then, of course, Instagram, Pussy Mystic, PUSSSY Mystic. That's more my creative, erotic, artistic side. And
you definitely need to follow her on that. I follow her. She's got great posts.
Yes. And so my group course for women is coming. It's coming around the bend. Thank you all for your patience, for those of you who've been waiting for it, and then one-on-one coaching, and you can inquire about couples work as well. Yes.
And if anybody has questions for myself, you know how to contact me via email info@azrielseer.com, or you can DM me on Instagram or Twitter @azrielseer. Next week, I have a special surprise that's literally just in time for Valentine's Day. So stay tuned for that.
Ooh, I'm curious.
And,